What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Rabbi Bradley Solmson, speaking about the new B'nai Mitzvah revolution taking place in America today. We'll also have a visit from our two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. Purim is coming up quickly, that great, fun Jewish festival. In fact, at my own Temple Emmanuel here in Tucson, Arizona, where I live, we'll be celebrating this very morning with a full musical version of the Book of Esther, told through the questionable lens of the pop rock group ABBA. It's going to start in about 45 minutes or so. This will be a fabulous takeoff of the show Mamma Mia, complete with costumes and sets. It's free and everybody is welcome, and it's followed by a full carnival with rides, games, and great food. And you've not really lived until you've heard the song, "He was swinging in the air that night." Oh, never mind. Anyway, Purim is the great Jewish holiday of celebration, reversal, silliness, and joy. Purim is also arguably the most enjoyable of all Jewish festivals, the one that features the reading, well, the chanting of the Megillat Esther, the scroll of Esther from the Bible. Lots of cheering and booing, carnivals, plays, food, drink, fun, and frolic. There is no more purely pleasant holiday than Purim, coming as it does in the springtime and promising silliness, costumes, and lots of opportunities to celebrate. In that spirit, we're supposed to break out this time of year and really embrace the true joy of being Jewish. While much of the year we tend to focus a little too much on other Jewish qualities like responsibility and, well, guilt, at the time of Purim and its general vicinity, we're commanded, literally commanded, to have a good time. Mishenichnas Adar marbim simcha. When you enter this month of Purim, the month of Adar, increase, multiply, celebrate joyfully. We smile a little more, tell jokes, plan parties, think up ridiculous Purim costumes to wear, and just generally enjoy life. Purim is a great deal like the other fun spring holidays going around, Mardi Gras, Carnival, Spring Fling, Rodeo, and the like. Only Purim has been around a good deal longer, going back as it does about 2,500 years to the ancient Persian Empire, a plot to kill the Jews, and are ultimately being saved and our enemies routed. Purim is in that great run of Jewish holidays from Hanukkah in December to Passover in April that can be described in just 9 words. They tried to kill us. We won. Let's eat. In Purim's case, it was the evil Haman, counselor to the king of Persia, who had it in for the Jews, and it was two Jews, a man and his niece, Mordechai and Esther, who saved our people. And the food that we eat and love is the fabulous hamantash, the pastry of perfection. Now, about that drinking thing and Purim, the mitzvah, well, while we Jews are not generally known for our drinking of alcohol in quantity, Jackie Mason says, mostly we're looking for another piece of cake, not a martini. The holiday of the Megillah actually requires us, legally, to drink ad de lo yada until we can't tell the difference between Haman the villain and Mordechai the hero. In that spirit, or spirits, there are some classic Purim songs about drinking, including this one from the Sephardic group, The Voice of the Turtle. Their Purim CD, The Sword of the Dove. It's called Cuando Aman se Emborrachó, when Haman was borracho, drunk.
Cuando Aman se emborrachó y salió afuera. A los niños preguntó qué peracha era. Dijeron, vaya era la Abraham. Tenemos padre Rahman, que lo sabía, de Yahamalomate. Viva yo, viva el rey, viva todo Israel. Viva la reina Esther, que tanto placer nos dio. Se emborrachó y salió afuera. A los niños preguntó qué peracha era. Dijeron, vaya era la Abraham. Tenemos padre Rahman, que lo sabía, de Yahamalomate. Viva yo, viva el rey, viva todo Israel. Viva la reina Esther, que tanto placer nos dio.
That was the wild, fun Sephardic song, Cuando Haman se emborrachó, when Haman was drunk, for the festival of Purim. I have to admit, I flat out love Purim. We rabbis sometimes talk about the fact that Purim is a kind of anti-Yom Kippur, coming exactly half a year later, 6 months nearly to the day, reversing all the customs of the abstemious Atonement Day with raucous celebration. On Yom Kippur, we dress in white. On Purim, in bright costume. On Yom Kippur, we fast. On Purim, we feast. On Yom Kippur, we abstain from drinking even water. On Purim, we drink even alcohol to excess, and so on. Or as one rabbi put it, on Purim, we dress up and pretend to be Gentiles. On Yom Kippur, we dress up and pretend to be Jews. But in truth, for me, Purim is proof that even God needs a good party now and then. So enjoy Purim, both today at the show and carnivals, and next weekend for the Megillah reading on Saturday night and then Sunday morning. Oh, and don't forget to eat the best food in the whole world, the delicious pastry called Hamantaschen, a three-corner cookie shaped supposedly like the hat that the wicked Haman wore, or perhaps like his ears. My wife Wendy makes the world's best Hamantaschen, and this year's include rhubarb Hamantaschen. They are spectacular. The tartness offsets the sweet cookie dough perfectly. She also makes peanut butter and chocolate Hamantaschen, cheesecake ones with chocolate chip, and my all-time favorite, the traditional poppy seed. She makes her own mix. But whatever you prefer, apricot, raspberry, cherry, prune, or something else, they are the best tasting treat of all. Chag Purim Sameach. Have a happy holiday of Purim. To play us in on this pre-Purim morning, here's another Purim song. At the end of the story of Mordechai and Esther, it tells us the Jews had light and joy. So may it always be.
Layhudim haita ora, layhudim haita ora, layhudim haita ora, besimcha besasam vikar. Layhudim haita ora, layhudim haita ora, layhudim haita ora, besimcha besasam vikar. Kein, kein tie lanu, kein, kein tie lanu, kein, kein tie lanu, kein tie lanu. Laihudim haita ora, laihudim haita ora, laihudim haita ora, besimcha besasam vikar. Laihudim haita ora, laihudim haita ora, laihudim haita ora, besimcha besasam vikar.
Israel, amen.
That was La Yehudim Morah, sung by Paul Zim for Purim, with the show coming this morning at Temple Emmanuel, and the actual holiday next Saturday night and Sunday. You know, Bar and Bat Mitzvah are the coming-of-age rituals that are central in the formation of Jewish adult identity. They've become a huge part of American Judaism. But along with the joy and the celebration of responsibility come some very real challenges today. Rabbi Bradley Sompson is entrusted with leading a new program called the B'nai Mitzvah Revolution. It seeks to transform this process for American Jews and American Judaism. Find out what it's all about when we come back on Too Jewish. Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics, and they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org. We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning. He's Rabbi Brad Sompson. He is head of the B'nai Mitzvah Revolution, a joint project of the Union for Reform Judaism's Campaign for Youth Engagement and HUCJR's Rehearsed School of Education in a way of reinventing the Bar and Bat Mitzvah for this part of the 21st century. Good morning and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell me a little bit about what prompted the B'nai Mitzvah Revolution and what that means.
So there is a realization that is not a surprise to us and won't be a surprise to any people listening, that for too many Jewish Americans, their young people and their families, Bar Mitzvah has become a graduation ceremony. And the B'nai Mitzvah Revolution is an attempt to say to congregations, we would like to partner with you to think about strategies that help reconnect with young people so that both two things, that the process leading up to the Bar Mitzvah or Bat Mitzvah and the ceremony and the ritual itself can be portals and doorways, points of continuity as opposed to exit ramps. We need more entry ramps into living a rich, relevant, meaningful Jewish life. And the B'nai Mitzvah Revolution is an attempt to say, we want to help you think about how we can transform Bar Mitzvah to what it was intended to be, a welcoming ritual and ceremony into Jewish life, as opposed to, like I said, a graduation ceremony.
So a couple of simple points about B'nai Mitzvah, Bar and Bat Mitzvah. Originally, it was just something that happened to you. It wasn't a big celebration. When you were 13, you were now of age. You went up and had an aliyah. You might chant a few sentences. There might be something afterwards. It developed into this elaborate ritual in America, really, more than anything else. And now we have the famous joke, if you want to get rid of mice in the synagogue, you just give them a tallis and a bar mitzvah. You never see them again. There's something in between is going on. Can you explain a little bit about the reality of what the numbers are in terms of children becoming B'nai Mitzvah, how many of them stick around through 8th, 9th grade, and so on?
Sure, there's good news and bad news. On one hand, there's something deeply meaningful and deeply resonant around becoming Bar Mitzvah that the vast majority of Jews in North America want one. They seek one out. And they're willing to do something to commit time and energy and resources in order to have it. That's the good news. The bad news is right now as you said, you're 100% right. We sort of contributed over the past 100 years, really, to this situation in which it's become, like I said earlier, an exit point and not an entry point. And so what we need to do is go back to our sources and our roots and say, how can this be more meaningful? How can can this resonate with your life, and how can we make sure this is something that you continue and not the end? But you're absolutely right. The vast majority of people see this as an episode, and it's episodic, as opposed to something that is the beginning of a relationship.
We will talk much more with Rabbi Bradley Solmsen about the B'nai Mitzvah revolution and what it might mean for American Judaism when we come back on Too Jewish.
If you're like most people, your biggest purchase is your home. Don't you wish there was someone you could turn to who not only had knowledge and experience, but who truly cared about you? If you're looking to buy or sell a home, you need to know Jill Rich. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. With over 20 years of experience, Jill's one of Tucson's top realtors. She specializes in all kinds of residential property. She can find you a starter house or a castle. Jill will find you the perfect home. While the stock market has wild gyrations, real estate grows in value. If you want to invest in income property, Jill can guide you. And if you're thinking about selling your home, Jill provides a personal marketing program to sell your house fast. You can reach Jill Rich at Realty Executives River Road office, 615-8400. Jill provides strong representation in a caring way. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. Jill Rich, call 615-8400.
We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke. Tell us about your product, Freedom Smoke.
Hello, Rabbi Kohan. A pleasure to be here again. Electronic cigarette industry has been around for years. Our product, one of the best things that we've done to improve it, is the base ingredients for our product are brought in from outside of this country. The only place in the world is certified kosher.
Kosher, smokeless, no tobacco, and a variety of health advantages. Do you have a lot of former smokers that have kind of quit because of Freedom Smoke?
Absolutely. We have several people who have written to us as well as told us on a personal basis.
How many flavors are there of what you sell?
Over 700.
And when people walk in the store and they don't know what to do, what do you tell them?
We start them off by finding out what they smoke and how much they smoke. We then set them up with the nicotine level that's appropriate for them, and we find the correct flavor, and that's all that it takes.
How do people find your stores?
They can find us on the internet, of course, freedomsmokeusa.com. We have a toll-free number, 800-705-7013. Word of mouth is really good for our company, bringing people into our stores.
And it's kosher.
That's correct. Yep.
We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at toojewishradio18, toojewishradio18 at gmail.com, or visit our website at toojewishradio.com. You can stream all past and present shows through the website or download us from there, toojewishradio.com, or at the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. Our Temple Emmanuel pilgrimage trip to Israel with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, is set for June 11th to June 23rd, 2014, this very year. If you'd like to go with me on this fantastic journey to Israel, whether or not you're a Temple member, seeing it all from Tel Aviv to Haifa to Tzfat to the Sea of Galilee to Jerusalem and much more, please email toojewishradio18@gmail.com or call 520-327-4501 for more information and an itinerary. We welcome our Mivina on Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Good morning, Rabbi.
And almost Chag Sameach.
Almost.
Purim is the most fun holiday. Chag Purim Sameach. Mishenichnas Adar Marbim B'Simcha. Lots of wonderful ways of expressing it. And Purim in America is fun, but it's nothing like Purim in Israel. I've only had a chance to be there once or twice for Purim, but it was fantastic. Can you talk about Purim in Israel?
Yeah. Actually, it's the favorite kids' Jewish holiday for sure. And I don't know, I didn't express Purim here yet, but let's talk next week.
Absolutely.
But I heard that here most of the costume will be Malkat Esther and, you know, and Mordechai.
Queen Esther and Mordechai and King Ahasuerus and Vashti and
maybe
some
Haman, I don't know.
Yeah, definitely some Haman. Absolutely some Haman.
But in Israel, I can tell you that there is a lots of parades on almost every city. All the kids will go and you will see, I'm not exaggerating, maybe thousands of different costumes. From Miley Cyrus to Ahmadinejad and everyone in between.
John Kerry this year, for that matter.
Maybe John Kerry will be also this year. Yeah, a lot of fun. At least 2-3 days off from school.
So I remember walking around the streets of Jerusalem. That particular year was very cold. There was snow everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And there were snowball fights across the boulevard. and then people running around spraying silly string on each other, and people in costume, and parties on the street, parties in the apartments, parties everywhere. Is there any other Israeli holiday where people really just let go like they do on Purim? It seems to me it's almost like Mardi Gras in New Orleans.
I would say it's a combination of Yom HaTzmaut, Israel Yom HaTzmaut, and your Halloween, but happy. Something like, I think.
Somewhere between the two.
Yeah, because a lot of mishte, a lot of feast and parties. And
what's your favorite costume you ever dressed in for Purim?
Peter Pan. Yeah. And my mother gave it to me at least 3 years.
Every year, until you outgrew the costume.
So I remember it.
That's right. Well, I hope you have a wonderful Purim. And the one thing I can tell you that we do in America, they don't do in Israel, is we make Hamantashen, Ozne Haman, with, by the way, Hamantashen in Israel are called ears of Haman, which sounds disgusting to eat, but actually they still taste delicious. But here we make them with chocolate chips and all kinds of fantastic fillings. And I never had that in Israel. So
let me tell you about the Moroccan Hamantashen Ozne Haman. So my grandmother and my mother, it's a tradition that they will bake, like it's not from the same dough that you're, like it's a dough.
It's not a cookie dough. It's
yeah,
usually
it's
a
more
sesame
like
dough
a
or something. Like a challah.
But the challah is on the middle of the challah, they will put a boiled egg. Huh. And everyone in the family will get his own one, like its own Hamantashen with egg. And this is the Moroccan tradition.
So many beautiful. Have a wonderful Purim. Marbim b'simcha, Chag Sameach.
Chag Sameach.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. Attention, Arizona income tax payers. You can help send children to our community's Jewish schools without it costing you a dime. Direct your tax dollars to JETCO, J-E-T-C-O, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. Here's how. The state of Arizona allows its taxpayers to get a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations, who then provide scholarships for kids from kindergarten through 12th grade to attend qualified private schools. JETCO helps provide a quality Jewish education to children in need at Congregation Anshe Israel Kindergarten, Tucson Jewish Community Center Kindergarten, Temple Emmanuel Kindergarten, and the Tucson Hebrew Academy. If you pay Arizona state income tax and make your contribution to JETCO, you'll get a 100% tax credit on your Arizona state income tax return. Tax credit's not a deduction. Your taxes are reduced by the amount you give. Join over 750 supporters last year who donated money to JETCO and got it all back in the form of reduced or refunded state income taxes. There's an additional tax credit now, the switcher credit, which increases the maximum donation you can make to JETCO to $1,031 for single filers, $2,062 for married couples filing jointly. When we are fighting every day for the continuity of the Jewish people, we should all take advantage of this great opportunity. JETCO is one way to help foster a Jewish identity for our community's children. Contributions to JETCO have helped hundreds of children receive the financial aid they need to receive a good Jewish education. To direct your tax dollars to Jewish education today, call 520-647-8442, again 647-8442, or visit JETCO on the web at www.jetco.org. Help give the gift of education.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been exploring the origins of anti-Semitism, and in particular, the contemporary anti-Semitic, I don't know if call it movements, but efforts that are being made in France and elsewhere, the Canal, the new neo-fascist salute. Let's talk a little bit about the anti-immigrant movements in the unemployed young people in Europe and how that plays into anti-Semitism.
Right. Well, I think, as indicated, there's a long history of anti-Semitism or anti-Judaism in the subconscious of Western Europe, and particularly those parts of Western Europe that used to be part of the Roman Empire, the Western half of the Roman Empire, not the Byzantine Empire. And I think historically, as when we look at the Middle Ages, for example, when we look even at fairly contemporary history, late 19th, early 20th century, when societies were under great strain, when there was high unemployment or hyperinflation or the what was tantamount to civil war, all three of which characterized Germany in the 20s and 30s, that led to incredible outbursts of widespread anti-Semitism, as did the expectation that the state would solve all problems. So many people forget, Hitler didn't seize power. He was elected in free and fair elections because Germany craved a strong leader who would solve all their problems, however irrational his approach might be. And it became increasingly easy for Germans to blame all their problems, the loss of World War I, hyperinflation, civil war, an almost communist takeover, general disorder and disintegration of the social fabric. By the early 30s, a lot of Germans had decided, well, somebody must be to blame for this. It was either an international capitalist conspiracy, but since they were part of that conspiracy, couldn't be that, or the Jews. And that background enabled the Holocaust to take place, and it enables far-right movements that are equally irrational to flourish in parts of Europe today. Why do they turn their anger against Jews, who, particularly in the case of France, are not new immigrants? They're not recent arrivals. They've been there, in many cases, for centuries. And they have served their country very well. In Germany, more Jews are recent arrivals from the former Soviet Union and elsewhere because the Holocaust ended the presence of many families who had been in Germany for 1,000 years. But it's not really about new immigrants. It's about people who are different and who are somehow damaging the chances, the welfare, the prosperity of quote-unquote real Germans or real French. And one thing that's important to put into perspective, and we often forget when we talk about situations like this, is these are tiny minorities. We're talking about 5, 10, 15% of the population. Not a huge majority, not a party that's likely to come to power at any time in the conceivable future. An annoying, maybe alarming, emotionally distressing because of the memories it brings back, but statistically and numerically, tiny groups of people.
Tiny but really unhappy groups of people who cause some distress. Tom, thanks for that thoughtful and careful analysis of the origins and the contemporary implications of all this. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. Now, I heard from a faithful listener last week that she actually guessed the punchline before I said it. She's just a little too Jewish. I'm hoping that won't happen this time around. Four young novice nuns are about to take their vows, dressed in white gowns. They come into the chapel where the Mother Superior is waiting to perform the ceremony to marry them to Jesus. Just as it's about to begin, four Hasidic Jews with yarmulkes, payas, and long beards come in and sit in the front row. The Mother Superior turns to them and says, "I'm honored that you gentlemen would like to share this experience with us, but do you mind if I ask you why you are here?" And the Jews reply, "We're from the groom's side." That was indeed the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week's portion is the second in the book of Leviticus, Tzav, the section that establishes the rules for the various sacrifices offered in the tabernacle in the wilderness, the Mishkan, and in the temple in Jerusalem. There are many different types of sacrifices commanded: burnt offerings, guilt offerings, sin offerings, and so on. But one group of sacrificial offerings stands out above all, the offerings of peace, the Zavach Shlamim. And among this higher category of offerings, one in particular stands even higher, the Zevach HaTodah, the thanksgiving offering. The rabbis thought so highly of thanksgiving to God that they are quoted in the Talmud saying that when the Messiah comes, all sacrifices will have completed their mission and all will be discontinued, with one exception, the thanksgiving offering. That sacrifice will last forever. Even in a perfect world, we must remember to give thanks, to be grateful for what we have. Gratitude for what we have is both the most essential of all religious motivations and the hardest to keep in mind. If we can each take a moment today to write or email or phone or text our thanks to someone who is important in our lives, or even post it on Facebook, we will begin to renew this great commitment of the Torah portion of Tzav. We have so much for which we can be grateful. And if we also each take a moment to thank God for what we have, to be more conscious of those who have less, we will begin to make this a better world. For thanksgiving should not lead us to complacency. Louis Untermeyer, best known as the great American anthologist of other poets, was a good poet in his own right. He dealt often with Jewish themes. In a poem called Prayer, he wrote, God, though this life is but a wraith, although we know not what we use, although we grope with little faith, give me the heart to fight and lose. Ever insurgent let me be, make me more daring than devout. From sleek contentment keep me free and fill me with a buoyant doubt. Open my eyes to visions girt with beauty and with wonder lit, but always let me see the dirt and all that spawn and die in it. Open my ears to music, let me thrill with spring's first flutes and drums, but never let me dare forget the bitter ballads of the slums. From compromise and things half done, keep me with stern and stubborn pride, and when at last the fight is won, God, keep me still unsatisfied. In other words, teach us to give thanks for what we have, but to strive always to improve what isn't what it should be. And so, in this week of Tzav, let us each find our own Zevach Todah, our own thanksgiving offering, and then let us continue to work to perfect our world. There is no ritual that typifies American Judaism more today than the Bar Bat Mitzvah, unless it's the Bar Bat Mitzvah party. Find out what is changing about this central rite of passage and what the Reform movement in particular is trying to accomplish with something called the B'nai Mitzvah Revolution when we return on Too Jewish.
Environmental Strategies Incorporated was established in Arizona almost 15 years ago. They're a corporation that's very unique and has distinguished itself as one of the foremost environmental remediation companies in Arizona. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is also a full-service general contractor. The fact that they have two divisions affords their clients the opportunity to work with one contractor to deal with environmental problems as well as their building and remodeling needs. Environmental Strategies clientele range from single-family homeowners to multi-million-dollar Fortune 500 companies. So, if you're in need of asbestos abatement, mold remediation, or general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies at 884-1114. And, if you wish, ask for Ken Goodman, the president. He'd be more than happy to talk with you about your project. That's Environmental Strategies, 884-1114. We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
The IDF, the Israel Defense Forces, intercepted an Iranian ship laden with weaponry and bound for terrorist organizations in Gaza. That happened this past week. The interception took place nearly 1,000 miles away from Israel off the Somali coast in the Red Sea. IDF intelligence showed that the weapons originated in Damascus months ago and were flown to Tehran, after which they were sent on a ship around the Persian Gulf and into the Red Sea. The ship, named the Klaus C, was a civilian vessel. The weapons crates were hidden among commercial cargo. IDF Chief of Staff Benny Gantz ordered the Special Forces interception operation the night before it happened. The weaponry captured included advanced missiles capable of reaching Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. The Israeli Navy is now accompanying the ship to an Israeli port. Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu praised the operation and said that it reveals Iran's violent intentions, as though anyone had doubts. Netanyahu has advocated increasing international pressure on Iran as Iran negotiates with Western powers over its nuclear program. I would like to commend the IDF, the intelligence services of the State of Israel, and of course the Navy commanders and personnel who carried out a perfect operation to intercept a secret Iranian weapons ship, Netanyahu said. At a time when it's talking to the major powers, Iran smiles and says all sorts of nice things, but the same Iran is sending deadly weapons to terrorists. In other news from Israel, a massive demonstration by ultra-Orthodox Jews against the Israeli government's proposed military draft law change brought hundreds of thousands of ultra-Orthodox Haredim to Jerusalem last week, virtually closing off the capital city. Route 1 into the capital was closed to all traffic except for public transport, and heavy traffic was reported on all other roads into Jerusalem. At its height, there may have been 500,000 protesters near the Quds Bridge at the main entrance to Jerusalem. By the way, the population of Jerusalem isn't that much more than that. Some 2,000 buses brought in demonstrators from all around the country. About 3,500 police officers, border police officers, and volunteers were on hand at the demonstration. The rally was peaceful. Soldiers and police officers mingled with the crowd without incident. No speeches were planned or made. Instead, the rally took on a kind of religious flavor. Shofars were blown. Rabbis representing the various communities, Ashkenazic and Sephardic alike, recited from Tehillim the Psalms. The high point of the gathering was when Rabbi Reuben Elbaz led the crowd in the recitation of the Shema Yisrael, which was followed by the crowd chanting, Adonai Hu HaElohim, the Lord He is God, as though it were the end of Ne'ilah. A special declaration was read containing the rally's resolutions, which were based on decisions by consensus of three major councils of Torah sages, the ultra-Orthodox leaders. They met last week in B'nai Brak before the rallies, Shas, Degel HaTorah, and Agudas Yisrael. The crowd cheered when the resolution was read, calling on yeshiva and kollel students not to be drafted into the army under any circumstances, not to give in to temptations and punishments of any kind, and not to cooperate with the plans of the army in any way whatsoever. Another resolution called on the Israeli government not to pass a law that would harm those studying Torah, force them to leave Torah study to the point of throwing them in jail, which is an uprooting of the Torah and sacrilege against heaven. We will continue to follow this very important Israeli story. While for the first 25 or 30 years of Israel's history, the original yeshiva deferment kept about 800 yeshiva students out of the army at any one time, there are currently a preposterously high 62,000 men exempted from service in the IDF because of being enrolled or studying in yeshivot or kollels in Israel. The non-Orthodox Jews in Israel, roughly 80% of the country, are not happy about it.
I am now 103 years old, and the more I am thinking, and the more I'm reading, and the more I'm speaking with people, the more I realize how happy I am. The greatest beauty of arts is music, and we musicians, wherever we go, we have this beauty. Nobody can take it from us.
And in a remarkable follow-up on last week's Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World, the wonderful documentary on pianist Alice Hertz Sommer, the oldest living Holocaust survivor who passed away last week at the age of 110 years old, won the Oscar at Sunday night's awards ceremony. The documentary, entitled The Lady in Number 6, Music Saved My Life, won the Golden Statuette for Documentary Short Subject just days after Hertz Sommer herself died. A remarkable synchronicity of events. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World. We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Rabbi Bradley Sompson. He serves as the North American Director of Youth Engagement for the Union for Reform Judaism, the umbrella organization Reform Congregations in North America. He has served previously as Director of Brandeis University's Office of High School Programs, including a variety of important programs there. He was ordained as a Reform Rabbi, received a master's degree in Jewish education from the Conservative Seminary, Jewish Theological Seminary, and is now, I guess, the point man on the Bar and Bat Mitzvah Revolution, the Name is for Revolution. Tell us a little bit about What is it that the B'nai Mitzvah Revolution tries to create? Because I think that calling something a revolution is a dramatic statement. What's the goal?
Well, we know, Sam, thank you. We know we need it to be, it's not that we need it to be dramatic, that if we don't act, we have really an important moment. There, this is an important opportunity. And if we don't act, and we don't act boldly, this is not about, so we wanted the name to reflect that we needed to act boldly, we need to act now, and that this can't be a new coat of paint or something superficial or a Band-Aid. What we need to do is really radically say, what does the 2, 3, or possibly more years of preparation and countless hours, how can we better utilize that? How can we better set that up so that people say at the end of the experience, and this is very simple, how can people have an experience and at the end of it they say, we want more, what's next? As opposed to thank you and goodbye.
So the reform movement at one point in its history, really for a long time, decided that 13 was too young for someone to be considered an intellectual religious adult and pushed for confirmation. Confirmation was a huge deal in reform synagogues. Bar and bat mitzvah was only done on demand, and some synagogues wasn't done at all. That change, there was sort of a historic change, took place mostly after World War II, but somewhat before also. Are we now saying, well, 13 is kind of young to stop doing intensive Jewish education? How do we make that transition?
You referenced this earlier. Traditionally, according to our original sources around what bar mitzvah is it's a beginning, right? And we know when we say to our 16 and 17 and 18-year-old, when you get a driver's license, the license that they bestow upon you does not say you're an expert driver. It says you have demonstrated enough skills to begin to drive, and you're going to need to get better, and you need to pay attention. You're not done learning that important skill. And we need to find lots of different ways to say the same thing, that And we're not saying confirmation isn't important. We're not. In fact, what we're saying is, how do we set up our messages so that we say, not only do we say it, but our families experience that Jewish learning and living, Jewish experiences are relevant to their lives, and they want more of them, and that we think the bar mitzvah process should be the on-ramp, the entree, right? The appetizer that says, oh, that was tasty. How do I get more? So it really is a beginning point, and we want to set it up that way. And so we really want to look at all the different ways we can create opportunities for people to say, this is adding value to my life. This is adding meaning to my life. I want more of this.
So I've seen a variety of different experimental aspects. Tell us what the most interesting things you've seen are, because obviously this is kind of an incubator period.
Right. It's an incubator period, and you asked about the name Revolution and that's dramatic. We think that's important. We were very intentional about the name. We wanted to shake things up. We wanted to catch people's attention. We would also say right now, you know, with any revolution, it doesn't start immediately, and you can always look back historically. And what we think we're doing now is planting the seeds of the revolution. And so you asked about some of the experiments. Again, some of this is relative. So there are some congregations who are ahead of the curve and are already doing things like this. And for some congregations, this might seem more radical. What is important for me to say, and then I'm happy to share the experiments, but what I want to say is, the B'nai Mitzvah Revolution as an initiative is not taking a prescriptive, programmatic approach. What I mean by that is, we are not telling congregations what to do. We're working with them to come up with answers and experiments that fit who they are, where they are, and what they want to do. So the B'nai Mitzvah Revolution doesn't have a curriculum that we're sending out and that we'll make available. And we want to share what experiments are going on. But our most important message is, there's no cookie-cutter answer. There's no silver bullet. There's no one-size-fits-all approach. Each congregation, each community needs to come up with a set of ideas and experiments and activities that meet their needs and their population's needs. So, for example, we have one community in New Jersey who is saying to families that they need to come up with a proposal of what their bar mitzvah ceremony looks like and it can be, it needs to meet the interests and needs of their family, and they literally write out a proposal and submit it to a committee, not of professionals, but there is a revolving, rotating bar mitzvah proposal committee in the congregation, and they have to sit down and think about what they want the process to look like and what they want the ceremony to look like. If their child is into music and poetry, they're going to propose a ceremony that includes much more of that. They're going to think about what of the liturgical pieces they want to include, how they want to incorporate learning Torah into it, and then they propose that to this committee, and the committee sits with them to, it's not about accepting or rejecting, but it's questioning the assumption that every single kid is going to do the same thing in their community. There's another set of communities that are saying, how do we make social action and social justice something that's deeply connected to each family and to the community, and is not just your mitzvah project day, but deeper and richer, more connected to Jewish sources. So there's a whole bunch of experiments that are around connection to social action, social justice, and going well beyond the here's what I did as my project to make it deeper and richer and more meaningful. So those are a couple of examples. There's much more that's going on out there. And some congregations are the radical step is asking the question, how can we do this? And they're back earlier in the process saying, let's come up with a task force that really is going to shake things up. We have one, I'll just give you one other. We have another congregation that is coming up with a parallel to religious school that takes place on weekends at a summer camp. So the whole family goes away, and instead of, literally, this is instead of Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Sunday morning Hebrew school, it's family and young people learning separately and together as they're living Judaism through Shabbat away at a Shabbaton camp retreat-like setting.
So let me play devil's advocate in a couple of areas. Like most congregational rabbis, I have always seen B'nai Mitzvah as an opportunity to create a religiously literate young adult, well, 13-year-old. And we have a regular Shabbat morning experience. We have a regular service. Some Reform congregations don't, but we have a very vibrant one. And we expect kids when they complete their B'nai Mitzvah to be able to go there, attend, participate, know what's going on. If they're called up for an aliyah, it's a comfortable, fun experience. How do you create that kind of religious literacy if the limited time that you have in a supplemental school is dedicated to these wonderful but quite different pursuits?
Great. So I want everyone to hear me very loudly and clearly. If the pendulum swings in any direction too far, we're in trouble, okay? So literacy and content are vital, and I think what we're saying with the B'nai Mitzvah Revolution is that if we start and end with literacy, if we start and end with the prayer book and never ask the child, who are you? Where are you? What are your interests? What path are you on? If we ask those questions, and I would say ask those questions as a starting point, find out what the child's passions and interests are, there is a way through our prayer book to build a connection. There's a way through the Tanakh, the Torah, and the Bible to build connections. And in our mistake that we've made, not everywhere, but in too many places, is we put literacy first. We put content and substance first, and then we end up with quote-unquote literate young people who don't feel any personal connection and aren't going to prioritize making a connection and making a continued investment, and then they walk out the door. They're done. They don't feel a need to continue. So it calls for balance. Substance and content is vital, but we have to mix that, and that's we're calling it engagement. So we have to engage the young person, and I would maintain, and his or her parents, their whole family. We need to engage them. We need to ask them questions. We need to know who they are. We need to have relationship with them. And this is definitely happening in many congregations, right? The B'nai Mitzvah Revolution is not saying that it's broken everywhere. In fact, we started when congregations came to us. Really, the genesis of the project was many congregations came to us and said, we want help with this. So we are not saying that that everyone needs to do what we're saying. We're saying for those who want to take this opportunity to think their approach to bar mitzvah. We want to help them. But you start with engagement, and from engagement, you get to education. But if you start with education, if you start with the Siddur or the Tanakh, the Bible, and don't ask who they are and where they are and what it matters to them, more often than not, they'll be able to sing the prayers beautifully, but they won't understand how it fits into their whole lives and want to continue it.
Another sort of odd or spin on this. In our own congregation, we created a Madrichim program, a teacher's assistant program for 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th graders. They can teach, they get paid eventually, but they have to continue their education. So I don't know if that's coercive or not, but we're keeping about two-thirds of our kids. Are there other kinds of ways that the Bar Mitzvah Revolution approaches this question? Would that be something that would be an interesting or a positive approach, or would it be more focused on how you see where the kids are?
So I think that there's...
By the way, kids like getting paid. I just want to share that.
Yeah, they do like getting paid, but I actually think that... I would say the pay, again, the pendulum shouldn't swing. You know, it's not only the pay, it's being imbued with real responsibility.
Right.
It's taking something and give and being in a leadership opportunity. I think human beings want to be in relationship. So it's taking a 10th grader and putting them in relationship with a 4th grader. And I would just say 100% where we're seeing that done, and the more you can invest in that process, right, because it's both a learning and a teaching process, as you said beautifully, we want to see more of that. We think that fundamentally, we think every person in our community should be in that relationship. So I would just say, take that idea and put it on steroids. Let me give you some examples. Every second grader, third grader, fourth grader, fifth grader, all the way up should have a mentor. And it could be one-on-one or in small groups. And we want to go beyond that, right? Could those madrichim each have mentors who are adults in the community? Right. So if there's one of your 10th, 11th, and 12th graders is interested in music, is there a professional musician in the community, or not even professional? Right. Is there, if one of them is interested in architecture, do you have an architect in the community? If one of them is interested in writing, connect them with a journalist in your community. And that does two things. That deepens that 10th, 11th, and 12th graders' experience, but also it provides you with a whole new outlet to engage more adults in the community who are not the parents of that young person, because then you're going to pull them into this and bring meaning and value to their lives. So this idea of the madrichim, the kernel of that is every person should be in relationship. That's one of the key ways of engaging people. And from that are going to come questions and needs for them to deepen their understanding, and that's where education emerges. And they'll knock on your door and say, Rabbi, I was just talking with my mentor or my madrich about Israel. How can I learn more about this?
Or the madrich will say, hey, you know, I think this kid has challenges here or there.
But it comes from engagement and relationship.
So let's talk about one of the challenging things for every congregation and rabbi and community. The bar mitzvah party, the bat mitzvah celebration, has really gone out of control in many ways. We see non-Jews having faux mitzvah parties because it looks so fun. The cost has skyrocketed even in a challenging economy. Does the B'nai Mitzvah Revolution seek to address this, or in a way embrace it, because it's certainly an expression of American Judaism?
I want to share my perspective, which is I actually think that we're seeing a downtrend to some of the hype and some of the oversized and overdone celebrations. And I want to say it's not a central focus of the B'nai Mitzvah Revolution. I do want to say this. We believe, because we talked about it at the outset, we believe that if you imbue the whole process with more meaning and relevance, if it's not cookie cutter, if it's not here's what you have to do to become, you know, to become this, and it's not at all, right, if there's no deep engagement process, we think if you do it with deep engagement, with deep relevance and meaning, if it's not one size fits all, you'll start to see, and again, I believe we're already seeing this, a diminishment of some of the excess. And I'm seeing lots of examples of that. So we want to address that. It's not our primary goal, but we think it'll be an outcome or a byproduct of what we're doing.
I want to thank Rabbi Bradley Sompson for a great visit about the B'nai Mitzvah Revolution. Where can people go to find out more?
So you can go to urj.org /B'nai Mitzvah. It's spelled B-N-A-I-M-I-T-Z-V-A-H. URJ.org/B'nai Mitzvah.
Thanks so much, and good luck, and we'll keep following.
Thank you so much for having me.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 o'clock. Our guest will be the distinguished historian Simon Shama, and the presenter and creative mind behind a series of great documentaries, including the new series, The Story of the Jews. Our playout this morning comes from Paul Zim. It's Purim Lanu, our Purim. My friends, have a Chag Purim Sameach, a very happy holiday of Purim. Join us at Temple Emmanuel right now, or watch our HD podcast through the website, TempleEmmanuelTucson.org, and celebrate with us this coming Saturday night. And have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a celebratory week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Purim, Purim, Purim lanu, Baruch Asher bachar banu. Purim, Purim, Purim lanu, Baruch Asher bachar banu.